Hello?
This is a collect call from
Life of a Lifer.
To accept this call, press 5 now.
Hello, friends and family. How you doing today? Let's go ahead and get into the interview. Hey, so I'm here with Brian Dolinar. This guy has got quite the acclaims to his name. He's a PhD and an independent journalist who lives in Illinois and has done some very paramount work in regards to the ending of mass incarceration. He is a wonderful individual and a guy who has an open mind and delves into these issues of prison. So, Brian, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Just hanging in there and taking it day by day. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So, I got some information on Joe Dole and the organization that you're a part of there and the things that you're working on with the parole stuff. And I noticed a lot of similarities to the Washington state system in that we don't have parole. It got abolished maybe a little bit after it did in Illinois. And our population isn't quite as big as yours, but I think there's around 1,300 people that are sentenced to die in prison. Well, I'm one of them. And there is no parole. Now they've expanded it to the juveniles or something like that there.
They just passed a bill for juvenile parole board in Illinois. It's pretty new. It was last year it passed. Yeah.
Yeah, this was pretty recent here too. So I noticed a lot of the similarities. It taught me the way that you guys put that stuff together there. It was good work. I'm impressed by the way that you've done it, and I've shared that with some people here. And they liked it as well. So I know Washington is working on doing parole as well. We had a bill that would have been a parole bill going through, but it ended up getting shot down in this legislative session right now. But they did try, and there's a bill in there right now. It's a different bill, which I'm not sure about yet, but it would give the prosecutor and the judge, basically, the authority to be able to petition them, and they could potentially take your case back for a resentencing based on what you've done with yourself. Like, if you've proven that you have been rehabilitated or that you showed that you could be rehabilitated, they would revisit your sentence. And I don't know if that's a good idea to have the prosecutor, the same person that sentenced you to life in prison, to be the one that looks at it, to consider it. But what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's a problem. The prison review board here has a terrible record, and so it's gonna. It also involves getting review boards together and parole boards together that will be sensitive to these issues. It's a big campaign. It's gonna be a tough fight because of the way in which for 30, 40 years now, mass incarceration system has been built up by totally demonizing a whole population of people and thinking we can throw people away and never have to worry about them again. And it's a disregard for human life. But we've seen many cases of people turn their lives around and making good for themselves. And people do stupid things when they're young. I have a friend here, my friend Roddy Carroll, who I'm working on a campaign with Parole Illinois. He did 31 years and got out in December. And he's turned his life around. He's an old guy now. He's not trying to get in trouble. And he's already working out doing car repair, and he's already got a job and got himself a car, and he's already getting his life together. And he's seen the worst of the worst. So we have faith that guys can do it and put their lives back together and grow out of their old habits. But we have to educate the public about this issue. It's so important that we're talking to one another coast to coast and state by state so that we're sharing ideas and sharing what's working and what other people are trying. And it's important we be in contact with one another and have these kind of conversations.
Absolutely. And I've interviewed a couple of individuals that got out after serving 25 plus years, and they were sentenced to 25 to life or a certain number to life. And in those states, they have a parole, which is hard to meet. The one guy, he went before the parole board 11 times before they gave it to him after doing nearly 30 years in prison. And this guy, after he's gotten out, he's been able to do all kinds of good stuff, because a lot of people, after serving all this time in prison, and they want to do something to give back the next generation, to try to help them not commit the same mistakes. So a lot of these lifers that end up getting out after doing all this time, that's some of the things that they do. This one guy started a nonprofit organization, and he's working towards trying to help the youth. And that's what I'm doing. With, we started this organization, Design Conviction, which is a social enterprise, and we're trying to help get these stories out there. When I'm still inside serving a life sentence, but that's my goal and my personal mission, is to try to help the youth and to not commit the same mistakes and not be in these same situations. And I think that the more people that they let out that are doing positive stuff and can actually make a difference, the more difference it's going to make in the long run. These cycles could be broke down. And I think that it's important as well to keep these conversations going and unite the people that are in that struggle and working towards a better future.
Right, and I think that's what's most important, is getting you guys on the inside as part of this process. You all understand it better than anyone else. I think if we can let you lead these campaigns and give you all access, you guys, you got the solutions. You've been through it, and the problem inside out. And if we give you all the microphone and listen, if people can listen, I think we can get beyond this. So in my journalistic work, I try to stay in touch with interview guys on the inside, get their perspective. They give me stories that I've chased down, lawsuits that I investigate, report on, some of the lawsuits filed by them. And I try to collect those stories of guys on the inside, impacted people who understand the problem, because y'all know how to address the issue better than anybody else. Y'all are the experts. So we had a campaign here in Illinois I was part of, it called the Prison Phone Justice Campaign, and it was part of a national campaign. We went to the FCC to lobby the FCC to mandate nationally the cost of phone calls from prison, federal prisons. And then we went to the state level here in Illinois, and we passed legislation lowering the cost of phone calls. The contract was further renegotiated, so now our phone calls are a penny a minute, which is about the lowest in the country. And throughout that
phone
process,
calls are a penny a minute there?
A penny a minute here in Illinois now. Yep, with Securus, yep.
Wow. Yep. We pay about, it's $2.51 for a call, 20 minutes.
Yep. Right.
Yeah, $2.51 for a local call, for a long distance call, it's around $3.
Right. So push them on that. That's a campaign. We always involve people formerly incarcerated, their families, involve them in the campaign. They could speak about how important it is for families to stay together. And the phone call is vital.
Right.
You know?
The calls they would get us on that. It used to be more expensive. It used to be $3.50 a call. Before that, it was even more. It was like $5. But they were 20-minute calls, and if you got cut off on the call, say the call cut off, it would charge you the whole amount, regardless of if you were talking for a minute or the 20 minutes. And then when they did something, they passed some law that made it to where it was by the minute, and it's 11 cents a minute, but then they add on fees to that, so it ends up $2.51.
All right. So, yeah, we waged a campaign here in Illinois to lower the cost of phone calls. And we have different groups here in town that are doing prison work. We have something called the Education Justice Project, and they teach university classes here at the University of Illinois. I live in Urbana-Champaign. They teach university classes inside the Danville prison. And they have a number of people who have been in the classes and since gotten out of prison, and they were involved in our campaign. We have a reentry program in town here called First Followers, and some of those folks in their early days of the program, some of those folks were involved in the campaign with us. And we took those people and family members. I had one woman I work with. Her name is Wanjel Harvey Robinson, and she was a young woman. Both of her parents were incarcerated when she was in the third grade, and she grew up talking to her parents on the phone, going through high school prom, telling her parents about it over the phone while they're in prison. We took Wanjel to Springfield here, to the state capitol, and put Longell in front of state legislators, and she told her story about how important the phone calls are and how important it is to stay in contact and how expensive it was and how people had to make a decision, groceries, pay the electric bill, or pay this phone bill. So it was because we had impacted people as part of our campaign that we were able to win on that one. So I want to convey to other people how important it is to involve impacted people in any campaign we're doing around the prison system here.
Okay. Yeah, that definitely sounds like it was a good thing there, and I'm glad that you guys made that headway and they heard you. A lot of times it's hard to get heard, or they'll hear you, but they won't actually do nothing about it. So It sounds like the work that you're doing is getting somewhere. Where are you getting to on the parole stuff? How's that going?
You know, we're trying to get a bill moving. It's still in the early phases, and it's a tough issue. But right now we're trying to build our base. We had an online petition that went around. We collected a bunch of contacts. We got over 1,000 contacts of people who want to be a part of the campaign in one way or another. Now we're moving into a phase where we're trying to get some good legislation and get some support behind it. One of the organizers for downstate Illinois and the Chicago Machine has its own way of doing things, but we're trying to organize things here in downstate Illinois, where most of the prisons are, where we still have a lot of people down here who run through the prison system. And this year we have a good deal. Last year there was an issue that there was a bill floated, but then there were a number of carve-outs so that people who had committed some heinous crimes, sex crimes, those cases were cut out. And because of those carve-outs, the people who are leading the campaign is a group of incarcerated people in Stateville prison. Those people found it they could not support the bill with the carve-outs. The bill was eventually killed. Now we're trying to get a bill with no carve-outs because we think everybody deserves a hearing and a second chance. So it's important that we stay, you know, strong on our issues and stay united on our issues. I think once we start throwing people under the bus, we lose support. And as they say, all of us are none, right? So that's what we're trying to lead with.
Wow. It sounds like that's the same thing that happened here on this bill that we had going. We had this bill going in the Senate, and it basically did the same thing. It started out including everybody, and then they whittled it down to where they took basically all murder, all three strikes. Do you guys have three strikes there?
We don't have three strikes technically, no.
They took all that off the table, basically, and then it ended up they couldn't agree on the terms of it, lost a lot of support because of that, and then it died. So now it's trying to regroup on getting it together, but there's a lot of people that say get it passed and then you can add on to it and expand it. But honestly, I feel like if they do that, it's never going to happen. It's going to end up being a watered down version of it. The politics involved in it is so abundant that certain politicians, they don't want to support it because what if you let somebody out and something happens and then they're on the hook for it because they passed. Right. So that seems to be the biggest issue. And a lot of them don't support murders or even there's, if it'll let out. And see, that's the thing that people get misconstrued is it doesn't mean that everybody's going to get out. It means that people will have this opportunity to get looked at if they've, you know, met the qualifications and they've demonstrated that they have the ability to change.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult uphill battle, but I know in Washington State, it sounds like you guys down there are getting more and more support for it because I've talked to a lot of people that don't even know that there isn't a parole system in place, right? And that's a big thing right there. People don't even understand that there is no parole. Most of the people that I've gotten in contact with that I haven't talked to for a long time or people that I've met that I've told my story to and tell them that I got life in prison, and they're like, yeah, but you'll get parole after 25 years, right? Or after 15 or 20 years, right? No. No, there is no parole. There's what? What do you mean there's no parole? Life sentence. That means you get a chance. There is no chance. There's nothing. There's the clemency process in which there's a minute amount of people that actually get to even see that board, and then a tiny sliver of a fraction of people that actually get out, and especially if you have a life sentence. So.
Yeah. What I found out here, and I found out about this, I was talking about my friend Ronnie Carroll today, that the parole was eliminated here in Illinois in 1978. They tried to float a bill to abolish parole and another a bunch of other restrictive measures in early 1978. But in July 22nd, 1978, there was the riot at Pontiac Prison. And it was a nasty riot. And not unlike the one that took place in Attica in 1971. And these riots were taking place throughout these years in prisons. And for a number of reasons, it was after that Pontiac riot in 1978 that the bill 1500 was passed and parole was eliminated in Illinois here. So there's still political reasons and historical reasons why this legislation has been passed through. Much of it had to do with real sharp backlash, and that was instrumental to building up this current system of mass incarceration where we got 2.3 million people locked up and 6 million people on parole and probation and et cetera, et cetera. Plus, the system has been incrementally, there's been some reform. Some of the numbers have been shrinking here. The Cook County Jail, which used to be filled with 10,000 people, the largest single site jail facility in the United States, has gone down several thousand. There are 6,000-7,000 people now. So, and that's largely out of real activist measures. In Chicago, there's the Chicago Community Bond Fund that's been bailing people out of jail at Cook County. There are reform measures that are working, and the prison population in Illinois has been going down, but it's been happening slowly. And it's only been as a result of political pressure. In my 15 years of working on prison issues, it's only Ferguson, the explosion in Ferguson changed everything. There's before Ferguson and after Ferguson, as far as I'm concerned. And that real changed the national psyche about these issues. But that's only because of real people and communities were organizing. The more we organize, and the less we rely on politicians, and the more we organize one another, families, people on the inside, people on the outside, activists, people concerned, the more we organize, I think that's how we get the goods.
Because when you think about it, there's a lot of people that get infected by incarceration that aren't incarcerated. You mentioned the sons and daughters of individuals that are incarcerated, but not only, there's all the brothers, sisters, mothers, aunts, uncles, cousins, and there's so many people incarcerated that it's hard to find people that don't have somebody in touch with somebody that's incarcerated.
Right.
And it's not only that, but to the common person who maybe doesn't even know anything about incarceration personally, doesn't have anything related to it, but it affects them in more ways than they may realize as well with their tax dollars and what's going on with all the spending that they spend on security measures when they don't take those same dollars that they could spend on rehabilitation or education and stop the cycle of mass incarceration and start educating people and rehabilitating them and then letting them out to get back into society. If you look at models of other countries, we're basically the only Western civilized country in the world that locks people up and doesn't let them back out. It doesn't make sense. Yeah, it's astronomical. It affects everybody because when you look at it and you look at the current system that we have and all the people that get out and go back to doing the same thing and then come back again and they're out there making issues in society that affect everybody. And the current system that they have doesn't focus on rehabilitating or educating. They're now starting to allow education more to come into the system, but they don't want to spend money on that for some reason. They want to keep perpetuating the cycle. I think it all has to do with money, right? But if they were to allocate those dollars to spending on education, you would see that cycle diminish and allowing people the opportunity to get out, parole, or whatever mechanism that becomes available to people that instead of giving life sentences out, that's okay. Especially young people who come into the system. I was 20 years old and I ended up getting a life without the possibility of parole sentence. Well, my life was over before it started. And I'm going to be in prison for 60, 70 years until I die. While I grew up and learned a lot of different things, and I've been able to overcome so much and get myself right and do a bunch of amazing things and help a lot of people, but yet I'm still going to be stuck in prison, not to mention that I'm not even guilty of what it is that I got convicted of to begin with. So
yeah.
It becomes a real problem to the fact of not only are you not humanizing people, you're taking away lives for the rest of their lives from that family, from everybody, and not being able to contribute back for anything that I've done. Don't get me wrong, I've done a lot of bad things in my life and I deserve to come to prison. I feel I've earned that for myself besides all the things that I've gone through. That led me to here. I was in this place called Tranquility Bay when I was 15 until I was close to 17, that these places got condemned and shut down because they were deemed to be torturous to children. We went through a lot of different crazy stuff on that journey. It was in Jamaica, and they had a whole system of these programs called behavioral modification programs that were ran in these different countries so that way they could get away with abusing kids. The parents didn't have an idea of what they were sending their kids to. They knew that they were supposed to fix them, and they would lie to them and tell them all these things. Well, it came out later on. And when I came back from that place, I was pretty damaged. I went through a lot of trauma and a lot of different crazy shit. And shortly after that, I ended up getting a life sentence in prison. And these are the type of mitigating factors that not a lot of people probably went through those same set of circumstances. But everybody goes through their different stuff when they're growing up, and a lot of that is what leads them to end up being in prison to begin with. So when you go back and you look at that, especially young people, and then they grow up like I grew up, I matured, and I started learning to do things for myself and taking responsibility for myself, and I'm a fully functioning responsible adult. I'm married now. I have a life, even though I'm doing life in prison. I've been able to demonstrate that, but yet I don't have an opportunity to ever get out at this point. And there's many other people that have similar stories. I'm not unique. There's a lot of people. I know a guy that lives right next to me that's been in prison for 37 years since he was 22 years old. And this guy, he does volunteers more of his time to helping people and making a difference in people's lives than anybody. 7 days a week he's doing stuff. He's made a big difference and a big impact on a lot of young guys that are coming into this system, into their lives to try to make a difference. So a 60-year-old guy like that, why shouldn't he get a shot to get out?
Yeah, so important you keep telling your story. I want to encourage you. So important you keep telling people about your story. So I encourage you to keep talking and want to tell you to stay at it.
I appreciate you coming on, Brian.
Thanks for having me. You stay strong, brother.
You too. You too. And we'll keep in contact.
Okay, we'll do that. Hang in.
All right. Take care. Thanks for joining in to Life of a Lifer. Don't forget to get on Instagram, A Life of a Lifer. Find us on Facebook. Go to lifeofalifer.com and subscribe. Thank you for listening. I'm Taylor Conley, and this is Life of a Lifer podcast. Be sure to visit the website, lifeofalifer.com, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode.